to throw. Fitzpatrick throwing high into the air.
Got it.
Parker, touchdown.
What a win for this Miami Dolphin team. Wow.
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins official podcast network, covering your team, your Miami Dolphins, each and every day. How's it going, everybody? It is Friday. We had a nice day off on Thursday. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and I'm here to bring you your daily dose of Miami Dolphins football. And on today's show, we're going to cross this thing over with the Audible's John Kangemi to take a look back at the first 6 weeks of your 2020 Miami Dolphins. We're going to pick offensive and defensive MVPs so far and take a look ahead position by position down the Dolphins schedule. We'll also get a first look at the Los Angeles Rams. All of that and more on this Friday, October the 23rd edition of the Drive Time Podcast.
That's another Miami Dolphins.
And Drive Time is brought to you by AutoNation. There are so many reasons to drive pink, but for AutoNation, there's only one: to finish the fight against cancer. In fact, AutoNation has helped raise over $25 million to drive out cancer. To join the fight, visit the AutoNation store near you or drivepink.com. And before we welcome on John Kangemi to this edition of the Drive Time Podcast, I first want to take a first look here at the Los Angeles Rams coming up in week number 8. That's the next game on the docket for your Miami Dolphins. 3-3, second place in the AFC East as of this recording. The Bills play the Jets on Sunday, and the Patriots host the 49ers, so a couple of games to look at there in the AFC East over the weekend. But the Dolphins up next against the Rams in week number 8, and the Rams have a game on Monday Night Football at home against the Chicago Bears. So a short week for the Rams coming across the country for that 10 a.m. body clock kickoff in that game, in that window. So that's always an advantage, maybe geared a little bit towards the home team, the East Coast team in that instance. We talked about the Seahawks record in those games coming across the country and how Russell Wilson was like 10-1 in those games. They're pretty much the only team that has that type of record level in the East Coast 1 o'clock kickoff. So that's something to look at there. They'll be in the blue jerseys over there on the far sideline, the visitor sideline with the Heat. As far as the game itself, I'm excited to watch the matchup. These two real masters of offense and defense with Brian Flores and Josh Boyer up against Sean McVay. The last time we saw Flores call plays against a Sean McVay offense was in the Super Bowl a couple of years back with the Patriots. And so I'm curious to see how that matchup kind of remakes itself here with Flores in Miami and take two this time for McVay versus Flores. We know the Rams love to build stuff off that running game, a very, very strong running game with those wide zone, those kind of Shanahan concepts that we saw with San Francisco. McVay comes from that tree out of Washington with the original Mike Shanahan, not Kyle Shanahan. Similar type of running game there. They condense things into short formations, get everything inside the hash marks, inside the numbers, and really condense down the offensive formation to create some different leverage possibilities, different matchups, and it puts them in good position to run those crossing routes that Miami really bounced back after a tough showing against Buffalo by really handling those types of routes later on this season, mixing up the coverages, mixing up the rush looks. I'm really curious to see how this defense attacks that Rams offense, and I feel confident in our coaches planning to get that job done. On the other side of the football, you just cannot let Aaron Donald beat you quickly. He's going to win his matchups. You're going to have to put two bodies on him a lot of the time, but you can't let him get into the backfield immediately like that, because that's how he wrecks games. That's how he forces fumbles. That's how he puts you into second and third down and long. You just cannot have that. So this matchup, we'll talk more about it later on the originally scheduled Thursday Rams preview podcast. Next week, we'll get deeper into this roster, this matchup, the key things to look at. But those are a couple of quick notes there as far as the condensed formations, stop the run, and do not let Donald beat you quickly. And always interesting to note, the short week coming across the country. All right, let's go ahead and not waste any more time here and get to my guest, John Kangemi of the Audible podcast here in the Miami Dolphins podcast network. You can also check out the Fish Tank podcast as well with Seth and Juice. Plenty of good content for you guys on the Dolphins podcast airways. Let's go ahead and welcome in John Kangemi. And joining me now is my regular Sunday night recap co-host here. He is the co-host of the Audible podcast with Kim Bocamper here on the Miami Dolphins podcast network. But because of the bye week, we have some extra time. So I'm going to welcome in John Kangemi into the Drive Time podcast. John, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, Travis. A little bit of a down week for us, but I still think we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we got the Rams coming up on deck. We have a quarterback change, so a tough opponent coming in, and some interesting topics to talk about there as far as how the offense operates. But I first want to look back at the season we've had so far. We've had a chance to watch a couple of games together. We've discussed all the games in the recap podcast. If you could just kind of paint a general picture for what you think this team is 6 games into the season, what would you say that is?
I think it's a very good football team, to be quite honest with you, Travis. I mean, there are games in there when you take a look back at New England that, although the stats and the feeling that day didn't have the Dolphins winning, that was a winnable football game, especially the way the Patriots were so really one-dimensional with, you know, a running quarterback being able to dictate how the game turned. And Cam Newton. So you look at the Bills game, the score was closer maybe than it indicated, but still a chance to win there. Seattle, there was an opportunity to get that one at home. You win the games that you were supposed to win. I think San Francisco was a game that the Dolphins took advantage of some injuries on the San Francisco 49ers roster that week and then played well, very well, stretched the field offensively, got off the field defensively. So I think this is a very good football team. I don't know how the dynamic and change at quarterback is going to alter how the offense works in terms of success, in terms of touchdowns, in terms of being able to move the football with Tua Tagovailoa now the starting quarterback and really for the foreseen future. You'd like to see the run average kick up a little bit closer to 4 or 5 instead of in the 3s. But I still think, you know, Myles Gaskin was an afterthought 2 months ago, and now he's the feature back of the Miami Dolphins, and not only running it, but catching it. So there's some opportunity there. But the schedule at 3-3, where the Dolphins are right now after 6 games, I kind of think they're happy with that. I think you could have squeezed out one more win somewhere along the line, but I think they should be happy where they're at.
I would love to see an alternate universe where Byron Jones played against Buffalo or Seattle, because I think that would have made, you talk about a tight ball game, and the way this defense has looked in the post Byron Jones coming back from the injury, they've just looked like one of the best defenses in the NFL since he got back. I would love to see him get a chance against, you know, Stephon Diggs and John Brown and Cole Beasley and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Those were probably two of the deepest receiving teams we'll see all year long, and we didn't have Byron Jones out there. But he'll get a chance later on against the Chiefs and some of the other teams down the line that have similarly strong receiving cores like the Chiefs do, for instance. We talk about the quarterback switch here with Tua Tagovailoa coming in and being your Miami Dolphins starting quarterback. And John, we talked about this in the pre-draft run-up, the pre-draft preview shows. I mean, we both were a big fan of this kid, the accuracy, the ball placement, the leadership, all the tools that we think that Brian Flores and Chris Greer both identified in this quarterback as a guy you want to go ahead and make the number 5 pick in the draft. And he steps into a situation right now where the Dolphins offense is playing well, Dolphins defense is playing well, 3-3 football team. What do you think about this switch at quarterback, and what do you think Tua is stepping into for his first start in week 8 against the Rams and the opportunity to have Ryan Fitzpatrick still there in the quarterback room with him as he makes that start and prepares for that first start?
I think it's a good situation for Tua to have him in the room, have him as a sounding board. And I think it was great for Tua to go on the bench and ask Ryan Fitzpatrick questions series by series in each of the 6 games, because he got instant feedback. He was able to watch what happened, not being under duress of center and in the pocket and scrambling and doing all the things you do on the field. But he was able to capture and snapshot those Polaroids in his mind and be able to go to the bench and say, does that match what I saw? You know, what he's given me the feedback from, and how would I do that differently? And how would I do that the same? And how can I incorporate that into my game? So you have those opportunities as a backup sometimes, and now you're thrusted into the starting role that you felt like you'd always get that opportunity to take over and kind of take the reins over from Ryan Fitzpatrick. But now it's his job, and he's got a tough defense to do it in week 1 against the Rams. But I think it's going to be, you couldn't put your quarterback, your 5th choice overall in the draft, you couldn't put him in a better situation, because the team's playing very well, both offensively, defensively, and on special teams. And I mentioned special teams because it allows you to have great field position. You're not always in the shadow of your own goalpost. And I think they enjoyed that against the Jets last week. But for Tua, you wouldn't want to put him in a situation where the team has lost four in a row. You have two injuries up front, and you, one of your two main receivers are down, and go ahead, kid. You know, go ahead and win us a couple of games. I think now for Tua, this team's riding pretty high right now in all three facets. I think the offense is rolling. The defense is going at it pretty good. And you put him in a situation on a pretty good football team that he can kind of take over and kind of roll with it, kind of get in into that flow and let his attributes take over. So I think it's the best situation if you're going to make a change right now. The team's riding pretty high instead of a team riding very low.
And Hall of Famer Gil Brandt tweeted out on Tuesday after the decision was announced by, you know, Adam Schefter of ESPN before the Dolphins could officially announce it on Wednesday. He tweeted out that Brian Flores should write a book on how to handle a rookie quarterback. Like, that's how highly he thought of the way the Dolphins have handled the situation. So, you know, there's two sides of the ledger here, but I agree with you. He steps into a great situation. And you mentioned the idea that he had those 6 weeks to kind of sit back and learn and see it from a, you know, a bird's eye view, so to speak. And I, to kind of flex here, I asked him a question on his Wednesday media availability about what that was like for him, how that helped accelerate his growth as far as to watch the way Fitzpatrick prepared, to watch the way he adjusted in game, all those experiences he got without having to, you know, put results on the line. And he said that it was huge for him because he was learning how to identify different fronts and what that might mean for the coverage, how the defense reacts to stack formations, a different thing the offense does. And you could just tell that he's already absorbed so much in a short amount of time. So a very valuable lesson there. I do want to talk about Fitzpatrick again, because you mentioned it, and that same press conference was hard to watch, man, because you love this guy so much. And I see Fitz around the building sometimes, like across the hall, and he'll give me crap for like my energy drinks that I have. Like, he's such a nice and fun loving guy that you really root for him. And you know, he'll be back in that same position where he's pulling for Tua and really doing his best to help this team win. So they, like you said, they do have the right guy there, I think, entirely. Before we move on here, John, I want to ask you, because this is something I've been meaning to broach with you at some point. You played in the CFL for 9 years. When your career like came to an end, when you were decided, okay, this is it, this is the end of my football career, was it a decision where it was like your body, or was it the coaches, or like, how did that decision come for you, and how did you approach like the end of your football career? Which, to that point, for people, you know, for athletes, the sport is your life, right? Like, you have to make a total life transition. What was it like for you?
Well, it's always hard. I think especially if your mind says you still want to play, but your body doesn't cooperate. I think it was more of a combination of that for me. My body just didn't respond. You know, I'd injured my back severely in college. I'd broken my back, and it took me a while to get back, to get clearance to play. So when I finally did get to play, I treasured every day, and I'm glad it lasted as long as it did. But it seemed like every time I had an injury anywhere on my body, my back would kind of flare up. And it was one of those things where you just tried to go as long as you could, and dealing with it mentally was probably the hardest part, because you wanted to be able to do it physically, but your body didn't allow you to do it all the time. It wasn't just on automatic pilot when you were a little bit younger and felt like you were a lot healthier. So I think, you know, bringing it full circle to the way Ryan Fitzpatrick in 16 years, where he's kind of played just about every role you could play. And I played a lot of those roles in my career. In pro football, being the starter, being the backup, going in and maybe playing two quarters when a guy wasn't having a great day, and him getting a chance to see it from the sidelines and then getting back in. I think all those options are on the table for the Miami Dolphins, because you could see those scenarios playing out for Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua Tagovailoa. So for Fitz, it's going to be more difficult, because, as he said, there was probably only two times in his whole career where he felt like it was his team. He felt vested. Whatever he did was going to be a direct result in terms of winning and losing. That was in Buffalo, and that was in Miami and this year. And I just felt like, you know, he's going to find his role tough at first. He's going to embrace it as well as he can. But when you call it quits, I think if your mind says it before your body, you better get out, because if you're not fully 100% committed to being able to feel like you can do it, that's a sure sign that you shouldn't be playing.
And I said this on the podcast on Wednesday, that I think we're going to look back at Ryan Fitzpatrick's presence in Miami so fondly, like maybe as fondly as a quarterback since Dan Marino was here, because of what he meant to the way this team kind of transitioned into the next phase under Brian Flores and Chris Greer, and maybe, you know, this young roster that looks so promising and building so much right now towards a possible stronger future. I think you can point back to Ryan Fitzpatrick and say that guy was so instrumental in having that stuff develop that we just look back at him as one of maybe an all-time Dolphins fan, like maybe an all-time great for the Dolphins because of that, because of what he meant to this particular team. But that's down the road. I do want to get into this year's team and jump back into this evaluation of where the team goes from here and start here with MVPs. And I was trying to write this down, John, and it's hard because there's so many guys that have played so well, especially over the last couple of weeks. And I want to start on defense because I think the defense, you know, fourth in scoring right now in the NFL, which is great. I mean, we haven't been that high in quite some time. I want to start there because I think they've been the ones that have really helped drive the success and been the key focal points of that. Who is your defensive MVP so far through six games? Because I have four names down here that I can't choose between.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right, Travis. I don't think on offense or defense you could pick maybe one guy that really stands above. On defense, I mean, the biggest surprise for me is the 17 sacks, is being able to pressure the quarterback. And what happens when you do that? You get turnovers. So with Emmanuel Ogba having five sacks, and then you look in the secondary and you have Xavien Howard with four interceptions, you know, one benefited the other. And it's just not two people. You know, Christian Wilkins played one heck of a football game last week against the Jets. I think Shaq Lawson has done a pretty good job. I mean, Jerome Baker leads the team in total tackles with 46. So there's a number of guys. I think Byron Jones helped Xavien, because both of those guys now, when healthy, they can run and cover, and it allows you to do other things with the remainder of the defense. And I think that Josh Boyer deserves some credit being able to put these guys in position to really put a spotlight on what they do well. So if it were me, MVP, I'd have to say Ogba has to be there. I think Howard has to be there. I think an unsung guy is maybe Christian Wilkins and what he's done. And maybe the last guy would be Jerome Baker, only because, you know, I haven't said his name out loud in terms of, wow, he's been flashing all over, but all he does is make tackles. And that's hard to do on a consistent basis in this league, especially with all the speed and the strength that you have. So those would be the guys I'd throw in a hat and say, okay, I can make a stronger opinion for the guys with stats, but maybe the lesser guys in Wilkins and Baker, they've been kind of under the radar, just consistently making plays.
And you look at what Wilkins and Baker allow the defense to do as far as Baker's like speed and blitz ability, all those A-gap pressure looks they show with the linebackers, his ability to quickly either get after the quarterback or turn back and run with running backs in coverage, that to me really helps them run that, let's show six or seven guys at the line, then we'll pull three out, rush four, and all the multiple looks they have. I think he's a focal point of that. Christian Wilkins, different fronts, over, under, bear, whatever they run, he can play all the positions across the defensive line, inside, outside. He's been a big part of that. You left two names off for me, John, so I appreciate that. I think Eric Rowe has just been stellar, covering tight ends, tackling. I pointed out on the All-22 podcast this week, you know, sometimes we see tackles made 7-8 yards down the field and think, well, that's a loss for the defense, right? Because now the offense is in second down and three. But an open field tackle is an open field tackle. And Eric Rowe has been so solid in that area, whether it's at the line or downfield. So he's been tremendous. And Bobby McCain, second year in the free safety role, both these guys, former cornerbacks, transitioning beautifully into safety. It's been so much fun to watch those guys work together, the way they communicate and pass off. Eric talked about it on the podcast, I think it was last week, how much it helps to have Bobby kind of heading off those over routes to pass and kind of playing that robber role sometimes when he's in that trail technique. So those guys work together so well. And like you said, just a collective defensive effort. I also want to throw Zach Seedler's name in there too, because I think that he's played exceptionally well the last couple of games too. So like you said, it's hard to pick. And so I'm going to go ahead and turn it back to you and force you to do the exact same thing on the offensive side of the ball. I wrote down three names here that I feel good about, but you could really expand that more. So offensive side, go ahead and give it to us, John.
I would say Myles Gaskin, obviously. I think he was the third back. He wasn't even, when we talked a couple months back, it was going to be a two-man show with Jordan Howard and Matt Breida. And I don't even know if Myles was the third guy on our list. You know, he might have been tied for third. But he's a guy that He's averaging over 4 yards per carry. He gets it done on the ground as well as in the screen game and the check down game. He's so valuable to make guys miss when he has the ball in space.
Yeah, I mean, every time you look up at the box score, consistently every single Sunday, there's Myles Gaskin with 70, 80, 126 yards from scrimmage. He's been consistently producing. He's scoring touchdowns in the passing game, the running game. He's contributing as a pass protector. That was a big note from Eric Studisville, Dolphins running backs coach, as far as the area of stride he made the biggest improvement in this offseason was that pass protection role. So he's been out there plenty, played a lot of snaps, and consistently produced on Sundays. But I'm curious to get your take on the offensive line, because for me, you've got multiple guys that have really played well up front for this Dolphins offensive line. If you had to choose one as a possible O-line MVP, which we know, John, will never happen in the NFL, who would it be on this team?
It would probably be, I would have to say Solomon Kinley, as an offensive lineman coming in and being able to be dependable without playing preseason games, being able to take the pressure going from college to pro, being able to mask all of your maybe things you can't do and just be able to be a pro right away. And he solidified, you know, really that offensive line, because you kind of had your fingers crossed on the edge with Austin Jackson coming into the season, because that was going to be the toughest role of any rookie playing left tackle in the National Football League. And I would throw that over quarterback because just of the speed of the guys that you're going against. But I think Kinley did a great job of going, we don't have to worry about the right guard position. We're going to be okay.
And you mentioned Solomon Kinley, which, again, you know, we talk about the list of quarterbacks post-Marino. I could probably show you the same list with offensive guard play over the years for the Dolphins, those mid-round draft picks that, you know, we thought maybe could develop into something, and for whatever reason just didn't work out. But now you look at this team, and I want to talk about this in the kind of position-by-position look ahead. We've covered the quarterback position pretty well, so we'll probably just skip over that. But on the offensive line part of it, Solomon Kinley and Eric Flowers, I don't know if I can remember. I've been watching this team since the mid-90s. I don't know if I can remember getting better guard play since maybe Jamie Nails and Todd Perry back in early 2000. Like, Eric Flowers has been tremendous. He's a big energy source. He kind of drives the offense as far as leadership and getting, you know, just being excitable, running after the football. Coach Flores talked about it on a presser a while back, how he loves that Flowers is the first guy down there to pick up his running back after a big run. And Kinley kind of has that same mindset, that finisher's mindset, where he's going to go out and find work and hit guys. So the offensive line play has been a lot of fun. I also put Devontae Parker down because his ability this year to battle through some of those nagging injuries. He's been on the injury report almost every week, but he plays through it. He plays through the little nicks and bruises, and he produces. And he's been consistently 50 or more yards just about every single game, and that's what you need from your number one. He draws coverage, draws double teams, and just does so much for this offense that I think Devontae Parker is on that list for me as well. So back to the position-by-position group here. I talked about it, John, looking ahead. The schedule goes like this. We've had some changes on it, and, you know, we had, a tough start to the season so far as opponents, Seahawks, Bills, Patriots. Getting the Patriots in week one's a tough ask for Josh McDaniels and a brand new offense that you have no idea what it's going to look like. So I think that the schedule has been difficult, but now we have the Jets at home. That game's in the bank. The Rams, the Cardinals, the Chargers, the Broncos, the Jets, the Bengals, maybe before a tough December run there with the Chiefs, Patriots, Raiders, and Bills. Four teams right now looking like they could be in the playoff mix as things go ahead here. But this part of the schedule coming up here is a chance for the Dolphins maybe to build up some wins and bank some wins going into that tough stretch in December. And we started with the quarterback spot there. We talked about that plenty. You talked about Myles Gaskin, John. What is your, I guess, forecast for the running back position now with Gaskin and company going forward over these final 10 games?
Well, I think it's going to stay status quo. I think you're going to get a blend of Breida with Myles Gaskin. If this offense is built for maybe more of an agile, quick type of guy where, you know, you can block them all, but you're going to leave one for the running back, and that running back has to take care of that last unblocked guy. And with the speed and the size of Gaskin and Breida, maybe it matches up better for what this offense is trying to do. So I think it's going to be a 1-2 punch there. I would like to see, honestly, the Wildcat expand a little bit with Lynn Bowden, because I think Lynn Bowden is going to be something the Dolphins can build on. I don't know, as well as Malcolm Perry, who we haven't seen this season so far, because watching those two guys, they are explosive. They have the potential to give you explosive plays. And if you can get them into the slot, if you can get them into the offense, moving down the line, I think it's only going to open up what the Miami Dolphins can do offensively already and build upon the skill guys on the outside, like Williams, like Parker, like Isaiah Ford, like Grant, you know, and the tight end play. So I would hope that those two guys maybe get some exposure over the remainder of the calendar.
And yeah, you talk about those guys that kind of have that receiver running back role, or they're listed as such on the roster, receiver slash running back. And we've seen some of the Lynn Bowden Wildcat package. And I mean, they've been positive plays. He also had a great cut block on a Miles Gaskin run as he was in the backfield as well, kind of an H-back role in that last game. Let's go ahead and stop there real quick again and talk about the receivers. You talked about Perry and Bowden. What about the top of this depth chart? Are they going to continue to just spread the football around? We've heard Chan Gailey talk about how much of an advantage it is where the defense doesn't know where the football is going because they have Devontae Parker, they have Preston Williams, Mike Gesicki's involved, Isaiah Ford, Jakeem Grant. Do you expect to see the same thing going forward the rest of the year, John?
I don't know, to be quite honest with you, Travis, because you're changing quarterback. Mm-hmm. And how many times have we seen Ryan Fitzpatrick give Preston Williams and Devontae Parker or Mike Gesicki jump ball opportunities? Does that continue? Does he continue to push the football down the field? How does that dynamic work? Because a lot of times those guys aren't open and you're throwing them open. So is that a learned skill? Is that a learned trait for Tua? Or does he already have that ability to push the football down the field? And will he continue on that line? So not only when you're open, but when you're covered, do I throw you open? And those are the times where that equals holding on to the football for me. So those are the things I'll be watching early against the Rams and the Cardinals and the Chargers and the Broncos, how that affects the passing game. I think that's something that you don't know until you get out on the field and get on a game day and get in the second quarter and you're running stride for stride with someone down the field. Is he going to give Preston that opportunity to take it away? Is he going to back shoulder Devontae Parker down the sideline? Is he going to throw a seam route that stops Gesicki in the hole? All those things are yet to be determined. So I think there's a big question mark for me in the passing game on how the baton's going to be passed from Fitzpatrick to Tua.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting dynamic as far as the type of receivers that Fitzpatrick and Tua have had success with in their football careers so far. You look at Fitzpatrick, we talk about Parker and Williams here in Miami, two tall guys that can go out and high point 50-50 balls. Gesicki in that same vein. He had Mike Evans in Tampa Bay, which was a similar build type of player. Brandon Marshall with the Jets previously. So he's been accustomed to throwing to these bigger targets, whereas Tua at Alabama, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, those guys can flat out burn you with speed and quickness and route running. And I look at a guy like Jakeem Grant as maybe someone that can get more deep shots in the offense, basically, you know, if we look based upon that history of who these quarterbacks throw to. So like you mentioned there, a very interesting dynamic for how this thing transitions. Let's go back to the offensive line here. We talked about Gesicki there a little bit in the tight ends. We'll go ahead and lump that group in. I talked about the guard play. What do you expect going forward here with this offensive line? Because you mentioned Austin Jackson, the tough call that he had to play left tackle with no preseason, and we think he did a pretty good job of that. Robert Hunt steps in, you know, albeit five games into the year, and steps in, and I thought did a pretty good job the last two games. What's your kind of bird's eye view as far as how this offensive line's kind of growing and meshing with the young guys and the veterans there up front on the Dolphins' offensive line?
I've been pleasantly surprised. I think Ted Karras deserves a lot of credit in the middle of that offensive line. I think Flowers is probably played above what I thought he was going to give the Miami Dolphins on offense. You mentioned the energy he provides. I think Solomon Kinley and Robert Hunt, Solomon, you know, probably stepping in and flawlessly taking over the right guard spot, and then Hunt coming in to a very difficult situation, going in and playing very well, and then complimentary the other tackle, Jesse Davis. He's been the flip guy.
And Jesse Davis's value and the ability to play multiple spots. He can also play inside a guard too. That just gives you, again, more depth and more bodies and more versatility up front on the offensive line. And that sixth offensive line spot has proven valuable, right? We saw Robert Hunt in the heavy package get plenty of work when he wasn't starting too. So whoever it is, you know, depth is important, especially on the offensive line. And we've just been lucky to not have to dip into that too deep, you know, beyond the Austin Jackson injury, because we still do have guys like Michael Dieter, for instance, Julian Davenport kind of waiting in the wings. If they get their chance, we'll see how much they've grown and improved, as Davenport did when he came off the bench in that Seattle game. So, and, you know, speaking of the value of that sixth offensive lineman, just real quick, John, the tight end position. We've talked about Gesicki. I think everybody knows what Gesicki is, a dynamic receiving threat who is a willing and capable blocker, right? But Durham Smythe does so much as a run blocker and pass blocker and different things that, you know, just don't show up as far as the box score and maybe the general fans concerned. Then you also have Adam Shaheen. And just kind of a quick aside, we traded a seventh round draft pick for this guy. He's got a pair of touchdowns. He had a 43-yard catch that set up a touchdown last week. Seventh round draft pick for this guy. Miles Gaskin was a seventh round draft pick. Jason Sanders was a seventh round draft pick. I mean, this team is finding gems late in the draft. And that's, you know, that's just my point I wanted to get across. But to come back to the tight end spot, Adam Shaheen, Durham Smythe, what do you see with these guys? And can they sustain this three tight end package that's been so prevalent so far this year?
I think you get deception. Because when you see Mike Gesicki come into the game, you think pass. When you see Durham Smythe and Shaheen come into the game, you think run. And I think it gives you deception, especially in the red zone. I mean, with motion and with where you line up on the line of scrimmage, you're able to do so many things now. You just can't sell out if you're a defender when you see 81 and 80 and kind of go, I'm playing the run. I'm not worried about play action. I'm not worried about them catching the football, because you'll get burned, and teams have been burned, as you mentioned, with the two touchdowns with Shaheen and Smythe being able to do everything in the tight end room, plus play a big factor on special teams. So I like what that room has developed in terms of their skill set. Hey, if you're going to ask Mike to block, it's not going to be great, but he's going to give you the effort. So I just think that that combination is doing really well right now in terms of giving flexibility to the play caller, Chan Gailey.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. I mean, several games, they've all played 20 snaps. We had no Durham Smythe in the San Francisco game, and they went on just fine too. So the ability for the next man up mentality and to just alter what you do offensively has been fun to watch. Let's go ahead and flip this thing over to the defensive side. We talked a bit about Christian Wilkins and Jerome Baker and Xavien Howard and these guys, but just on the defensive line, as far as what you expect to see going forward, we've seen both Emmanuel Ogbon and Shaq Lawson play a heavy workload. Zach Sealer's getting more snaps up front. Christian Wilkins always gives you, you know, 70-75% of the defensive snaps. On the defensive line, what do you see going forward? Just a continuation of more mixture and more fronts? And do you think there's an unsung hero we might see kind of step up here into the fold? What do you got on this defensive line, John?
Well, I think the unsung hero so far has been Sealer. Yep. I think he's played multiple positions. He's been able to be productive in those positions. And with the loss of Devon Godchow, he's played a bigger role. Now, whether you get that from Raekwon Davis in the future, you're hoping. But I think Zach's been really that unsung hero that's been able to make this front work, allow Christian Wilkins to move around, allow those guys on the edge. You mentioned Shaq Lawson and Emmanuel Ogba to pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. You've seen a lot of a mixing with linebackers and safeties at the line of scrimmage. So I think the defensive line has been above average. I think they can still do a little bit better job in terms of run, but getting after the quarterback, I think they've done a pretty good job in not over being overzestful in terms of being disciplined. They haven't gotten out of the rush lanes a lot, even when they faced guys that could run the football at the quarterback position. I think they're getting used to playing with each other, which is good, because when you have so many different fronts, it only takes one guy to be out of position to create, you know, a huge running lane for a mobile quarterback. So I think they work in tandem very well up front.
Emmanuel Ogba talked about exactly that on the Wednesday edition of Drive Time, saying how there is a growing comfort level with this defensive front. And you see that marriage and relationship between the defensive line and linebackers and how it's starting to really sync up. We saw Christian Wilkins get a sack on a Sam Egwavon little pick stunt there on the middle of that rush against the Jets. And the one of the Ogba sacks came when pressure on the outside forced Flacco to step up into a B gap. And there was Ogba looping in as a stunter to greet him there. there in that gap. So that rush integrity, that gap integrity has been fun to watch. And that's a good transition into the linebacker position, because in that same Jets game, we were down Kyle Van Noy. We saw Kamu Grugia-Hill break a finger and come back into the game. What a stud, by the way. Andrew Van Ginkle exits the game, and they still got production out of that position, John. And that was something I talked about in the training camp run up to the season, was I look at this defense with depth at certain areas where it's going to be important, and linebacker was one of those. I mean, we've got, what, five or six guys here that can really contribute at that position?
And they can play, you know, multiple positions, which gives you that flexibility that Josh Boyer is looking for. And you mentioned the injuries. I think this was a good week to have a bye week for this defense, because at linebacker, you mentioned Van Ginkle goes out. You had Grugia-Hill go out. You went into the game with Kyle Van Noy not being healthy. So I think this was a valuable time for the linebacker position, led by Jerome Baker, who's done an outstanding job not only rushing the quarterback but making tackles in and around the line of scrimmage, being that dependable linebacker. And I expect this group especially to grow a little bit more as the second half of the season comes upon us, only because they're asking these guys to do so much, lining up on the edge of the defense, lining up at the traditional linebacker spots, being able to be in pass coverage, being able to get after the quarterback. I just think that this group is better than I thought they would be. Landon Roberts started slow, and I think he's gotten better. I didn't like the way he maybe started the season. It seemed like he couldn't get off blocks, or he was always chasing, and now he's anticipating and in front of plays, which is in a much better position to be. So I think his improvement strengthened that entire group.
Definitely. I thought he played really fast the last two games as well, so it's on the same page there. And you talked about maybe some growth in the area. Kyle Van Noy, for me, I think this is a guy that, you know, if I had to put my eggs in the basket as far as who I think is going to take a big step in the second half, I would go towards Kyle Van Noy, because I think that even though he's been, you know, gap sound and assignment sound, I think that he hasn't quite made the splash play yet, and that's going to come, because that's what he did in New England. That's what he'll do here for Brian Flores. And speaking of what Brian Flores has had, good secondary play kind of follows this guy as well as Josh Boyer. We talked about Xavien Howard. We talked about Byron Jones. I think that everyone knows how good those two guys are and how good their production's been so far this season. But I was curious to ask you, a former DB, John, we saw Eric Rowe and Bobby McCain make a transition from cornerback to safety. And you go back over, it was a Move the Sticks podcast. They found old Bill Belichick defensive principle notes. And on his cornerback and safety position at safety, he said, preferably ex-cornerbacks. And we know that Brian Flores was under that tree for 20 years or so. I mean, as a guy that's played the position, how tough is that? And what's the advantage of having cornerbacks in those safety roles that can maybe help come down and help you cover too?
Speed. I think the quick twitch, I think you get that from a corner, and you get the confidence of, hey, a big play just happened. Don't worry, I'm coming right back at you, and I'm going to pick it off the next time. So I think you have that mentality of a corner in a safety, strong safety or free safety in Rowe and Bobby McCain, that, you know, you get me once, so what? I'm coming right back at you, and I'll be in your face. And I think that's the attitude the entire secondary has taken. I thought they've played really well together, and they've gotten better as the linebacking group has gotten better, getting to play with one another game after game, week after week. I think the secondary has done the same thing. And I think Eric Rowe, you mentioned it when we talked and focused in on maybe an MVP of the defense. I think he's been one of those guys that has taken away the opposing tight end. I mean, just think of San Francisco in Kittle. You know, he had 15 targets, 15 catches the week before. He plays the Miami Dolphins, and he's non-existent in the game. Now, whether that's due to quarterback play in our game, so be it. But Eric Rowe really took him as a big weapon and took him out of the football game. And I think Bobby McCain has done a nice job of getting depth and being able to see everything and be able to mask certain things and be the last line of defense. So I think that secondary is going to continue, you know, to play well. They've played very well, and I think the expectation is they will continue to do that.
I'm going to go ahead and intertwine my final 2 points, and we'll get you out of here, John. I appreciate your time on this crossover edition of the Drive Time Podcast with John Kangemi of the Audible on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. And We talked about identity earlier on, and my identity for this team is just constant improvement, right? The coaches talk about it, the players talk about it. And last year, they started off in September 0-4. In October, they were 0-3. Then they went 2-2 in November and 3-2 in December. This year, they're 1-2 in September, 2-1 in October, and then we have November to come. And again, to tie it back to that Patriots tree, that was a model of Bill Belichick for so long with the Patriots. They maybe started slow some years, but they were always a competitive football team that never lost in December, played good in November, and carried that into playoff success as well. We have a long way to go to get to that point, but just the constant improvement, I see it with this team, and it brings me back into this cornerback slash safety position, because I'm looking at two players who could give you even more reinforcements in Brandon Jones and Noah Igbinoghene. And Igbinoghene replaced Byron Jones early on, and he had his tests and his struggles, and certainly will learn from that. Brandon Jones, I thought, played exceptionally well late against the Jets in this last game. How do those two guys come in and maybe have an impact on the secondary down the second half of the season?
Well, and I'll throw Nick Needham in there as well, because he's a guy that's going to have to play well in different packages, whether it's nickel and dime, and however Josh Boyer is going to dial it up down the stretch. I think all three of those guys are going to have to play multiple positions, and then when their number's called, don't get the drop-off. I think Igbinoghene was – it was good that he was tested under fire and maybe didn't pass all those tests, but he learned from it and he was better for it when he got back onto the field. And I think Needham's been used in different situations. And I like Brandon Jones because of his speed and his, I don't know if it's recklessness, but it's an aggressive style that he plays around the line of scrimmage that you know where he's lining up and you know you've been hit by him because he's a guy that comes at you full speed. So I like what those guys bring to the table. I don't think they're going to be used a whole lot unless it's injury, but when their number is called in the defense, of whether it's nickel or dime, I think that these guys are going to be able to play at a high level.
Yeah, when Brandon Jones comes onto that field in that big nickel package, the three safeties and two corners, he's going to get one of those Rashad Jones hook zone pick sixes. It's coming. He's been close a couple of times now. I think it's going to come for him. John, I told you 20, 30 minutes. We've been about double that, so I appreciate your time today, sir. Great episode here of the Drive Time Podcast crossover. Do not forget to check out the Audible podcast with both John and Kim Bocamper as well here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. John, really appreciate your time today, man. Thank you.
You got it, Travis. And I want to say the kicking game has been great. I don't want any of the kickers out there to get mad at us.
That is my biggest fault. I always leave that part off. So I appreciate that's why we have
I
you
want
on.
To say those guys have been great.
Jason's been perfect. What else can you say? And Matt Hawks putting punts down inside the 10-yard line. You can't beat that. So complete team football. And you're right. Coach Flores would kill us if he learned we didn't talk about his kicking game. So I appreciate that, John.
You got it.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right. Thanks, Travis.
And there he goes, the venerable John Kangemi here on the Dolphins Podcast Network. Great episode there. I love those conversations with him getting into the weeds on this football team. We went way too long. Let's go ahead and wrap it up right there. That's going to be my time. You all please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. Give me a follow on Twitter at Wingfield NFL. Follow John at John Kangemi. Follow the team at Miami Dolphins. And of course, the Fish Tank and Audible podcast, as well as MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up.